Mary's song, the Magnificat, the song of the angels' announcement to the shepherds, Simeon's song of praise in the temple, the Issues, Etc. book of the month is titled The Songs of Christmas. This new arch book would make a great Christmas gift for children ages 2 through 10. The Songs of Christmas is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. A great stocking stuffer for young children or grandchildren, The Songs of Christmas. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday afternoon, November the 19th. We're turning to the subject of the U.S. Constitution and the advocacy of same-sex marriage. It is often heard, I don't know how many times in the last year I have heard read in the media when the advocates of same-sex marriage are trying to state their case, so to speak, that they have the 14th Amendment, equal protection under the law, on their side. Now, I don't know how carefully they're advancing this in the courts, but they certainly are in the media. Is it true? And we also have to talk a bit about the Fifth Amendment as well. Joining us to discuss the U.S. Constitution and the advocacy for same-sex marriage, Tad Armstrong. He's an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, formerly taught constitutional law at Greenville College, founder of the ELL Constitution Clubs, and author of the book It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. Tad, welcome back.
Todd, good to be here.
Why do the advocates of same-sex marriage say that they have the U.S. Constitution on their side?
Well, because if they live in a state that has embraced same-sex marriage through their legislative actions, per the Supreme Court decision in United States versus Windsor, they are correct. But this story, actually, if you want to go back to the beginning of this issue, you'd have to go back thousands of years. Same-sex marriage has not been considered an accepted lifestyle until very recently, in our short 21st century. In fact, in 1996, before any state of our union adopted same-sex marriage, the federal government, through Congress, adopted and passed the Defense of Marriage Act. The reason for that is they anticipated states may well adopt same-sex marriage, and they foresaw that that would pose many, many problems with respect to enforcing federal law. So they made it clear that for federal law purposes only, for federal law purposes, marriage shall be defined as an institution between one man and one woman. Can I explain this Windsor case to you, Todd?
Yeah, please do.
It really has everything to do with what we're talking about and the importance of this decision and what the Supreme Court does with the recent courts of appeal decisions really is far more important than the same-sex issue. So let me explain that. The Fifth Amendment says a lot of things, but one of the things it says is that no person shall be deprived of liberty without due process of law. Now, that was applied in the Windsor case to state law as well, not just federal law, state law as well through incorporation of the 14th Amendment. That we don't need to get into the weeds on those issues. Suffice it to say that most of the Bill of Rights has been interpreted to apply equally to state and local government as it does to federal government. But that's not the real central message of the Windsor case. In the Windsor, I have to give you a few of the facts to understand it. In the Windsor case, Edith Windsor and Thea Speier were residents of New York City. They married in Canada, where it was legal to do so. I think at that time it was not legal in New York City, but by the time this case reached the Supreme Court, the New York legislature adopted and embraced same-sex marriage. So Ms. Speier died. Edith Windsor, apparently they were fairly wealthy, and Edith Windsor wanted to take advantage of the Internal Revenue Service Code provision that exempts an estate going from one spouse to another from the federal estate tax. This amounted to more than $300,000 in taxes to her. And what stood in her way was the Defense of Marriage Act, of course, which says that by definition, a spouse can only be of the same sex. So she challenged that in the Supreme Court. And don't forget now, it's very critical that we're dealing now with an interpretation of the Defense of Marriage Act as it applied at the time of this case to a state that had legally embraced same-sex marriage. That's really key to an understanding of this case. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court of the United States struck down the Defense of Marriage definition as it applied in states that adopted same-sex marriage. In a 5-4 decision, the interesting to note that the president, the executive branch, did not defend the congressional act. They sent a what's called a 530D letter before the judgment was even heard in the trial court, that they weren't going to defend it. They didn't believe that DOMA was constitutional, and an arm of the Congress stepped in and represented Congress in the defense of DOMA, and it went up on appeal. But in this decision, the Supreme Court talked about the history of our definition, standard definition of marriage, our traditional definition, as well as these evolving standards of decency. They like to phrase it in such terms. And ultimately, they held that through the fifth, that this was a due process right, this concept of a right to marry within the same sex. And because, based upon that, as the federal law applied to them, it was unconstitutional because they then lived in a state that adopted same-sex marriage. The audacity of these five justices to do that, and the problem with it, really is deeper than same-sex marriage. It is a destruction of freedom. It is a destruction of democracy. Now, look, somebody has to have the last say when it comes to the constitutionality of legislative acts. I'm not in favor of the president having that much power. I'm not in favor of Congress having that much power. We know of many occasions where they exceed their authority, and many of them, I'm sure, could not pass a simple exam on the Constitution, pay little attention to the Constitution. I'm okay with the Supreme Court doing this. That doesn't mean I always agree with their opinions. I don't agree with this opinion, but it has more to do with a loss of freedom and a loss of democracy than it does same-sex marriage. And I have to point out a couple things, if I may. I'm sorry to ramble on.
Go ahead.
But Justice Scalia points out the real significance of this case. Throughout the opinion, by the way, Justice Kennedy, who wrote the opinion, time and time again, it's beyond argument that he based his opinion on the traditional power of the states to define marriage as they see fit. Now, that'll be important in issues that come up in the future. But Justice Scalia, I've got to quote this because it gets to the heart of the matter. In his dissent, he did not agree with this opinion. He said, "This case is about the power of our people to govern themselves and the power of this court to pronounce the law. Today's opinion aggrandizes the latter with the predictable consequence of diminishing the former. We," referring to the Supreme Court, "we have no power under the Constitution to invalidate this democratically adopted legislation. The court's errors on both points spring forth from the same diseased root and exalted conception of the role of this institution in America."
The Supreme Court.
Yeah. In other words, he's saying these five justices have arrogantly exceeded their power and removed, they've removed the power of our elected representatives in Washington, D.C. to determine this issue. He's saying the Constitution says nothing about the definition of marriage, and in fact, Justice Kennedy says in his opinion, at the time of our founding, at the time of the Constitution's adoption, it was clear that the meaning of marriage was one woman and one man, and it has been so for well over 200 years.
So he admits that.
He does admit that, yes. But he falls back on this concept of evolving standards of decency. But who decides that? Five of nine unelected judges or the majority of Congress? It's, you see the audacity of this kind of a power grab. So now where does that leave us today? On October, by the way, this decision was rendered June 26, 2013, so it hasn't been that long ago. On October 6th, this last October, there was a Court of Appeals decision that struck down legislative actions in Indiana, Utah, Oklahoma, Virginia, and Wisconsin that banned same-sex marriage. That decision struck that down. On November 5th of this month, St. Louis Circuit Judge struck down Missouri's ban on same-sex marriage. But on November 6th, and by the way, in that first October 6th Court of Appeals decision, the Supreme Court denied appeal of that. Now, that you never know why they deny appeals. Maybe it was to await until the issues were more firmed up. And for example, on November 6th then, the day after the St. Louis Circuit Judge ruled, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the ban of same-sex marriage in Michigan, Kentucky, Ohio, and Tennessee. So now we have a conflict between courts of appeal. And I would imagine the Supreme Court will now accept an appeal joint appeal of these different viewpoints and arrive at a decision. But it's interesting to note, if the court means what they said in the Windsor case, they will have to honor the legislative enactment either through statute or constitutional amendment of the states that banned same-sex marriage, because they held in Windsor, look, traditionally, the definition of marriage belongs to the states.
Dealing with New York at the time, who had. Yes.
Yes. And okay. So the underlying basis, in my estimation, it's hard to avoid a conclusion that they were basing their decision to strike down the federal definition as it applied to New York. Why? Because New York embraced same-sex marriage, and the power to do that, to define marriage, rested with the state. I don't see how they can avoid affirming the ban of same-sex marriage in conservative states. Scalia, in his dissent, kind of foresaw, he could read between the lines, and he doesn't believe they're going to live by their underlying reasoning in the Windsor case, and that they're probably going to ban same-sex marriage in those states. But Scalia says this, and then we can get to some current issues. Justice Kennedy, throughout his opinion, was very mean-spirited when it came to people who believed that going the same-sex direction in this nation is not good for the country. And Scalia says, to hurl such accusations so casually demeans this institution. There are valid reasons that have nothing to do with hate to abide by our tradition of one man, one woman marriage. And part of that is the tremendous upheaval and chaos we would have when we have states it's called conflict of laws when you have married same-sex partners move from one state that embraces it to another state that doesn't. When it comes to federal law, how do you resolve those issues? Well, DOMA solved that. You resolve them based on the federal definition, which was struck down in states that embrace it, not in states that don't. So what are we going to do when that comes up?
Well, let's take a break right there, yeah. And when we come back, we'll pick this up right where we're leaving off. Tad Armstrong is our guest on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 19th. We're talking about the U.S. Constitution and same-sex marriage. He's an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, formerly taught constitutional law at Greenville College, founder of the ELL Constitution Clubs, and he's author of the book It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance.
Are you planning a corporate luncheon, a theme party, or an anniversary celebration? Lunch for the Bunch Catering has been serving Greater St. Louis for more than 15 years with professional staff, appealing presentation, and culinary excellence. Find out more at lunchforthebunch.com or call 618-344-1921. 618-344-1921. Lunch for the Bunch in O'Fallon, Illinois. lunchforthebunch.com.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The Gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the Gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, inviting all college students and those with an interest in campus ministry to join us for Taboo, the 2015 National LCMS Campus Ministry Conference, this coming January 5th through 7th at St. Louis University in St. Louis. That's right, it's Taboo in the Lou. Find out more at lcms.org/LCMSU.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. St. Mark Lutheran, Edmond, Oklahoma. Emmanuel Lutheran, Manchester, New Hampshire. University Lutheran Chapel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Freedom, Pennsylvania. Holy Cross Lutheran, O'Fallon, Missouri. St. Paul Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. Christ Lutheran, Rochester, Minnesota. Holy Cross Lutheran, Carlisle, Iowa, St. Peter's Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Grace Lutheran, Wellsville, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. IssuesETC.org. Click support. The Issues, Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the U.S. Constitution and same-sex marriage. Tad Armstrong is our guest. Tad, let's pick up where we left off. We kind of have come to the point where U.S. versus Windsor, the court has applied a certain kind of reasoning to allow strike down a portion of the Defense of Marriage Act in the case of New York where same-sex marriage was previously legal. You said it's going to be very difficult for them to be consistent when it comes to these appeals that are obviously going to come before them now.
From states that have banned same-sex marriage. I think it will be.
So where do we go from here?
Well, let me in order to fully understand the seriousness of the Windsor case, because I believe personally that gay folks ought to be concerned with the Windsor case.
Why is that?
Well, in Scalia's dissent, he closes with this. It's eloquent. It addresses the seriousness of the issue. He says this, in the majority's telling, in the majority opinion, this story is black and white. Hate your neighbor or come along with us. The truth is more complicated. It is hard to admit that one's political opponents are not monsters, especially in a struggle like this one. And the challenge in the end proves more than today's court can handle. Too bad. A reminder that disagreement over something so fundamental as marriage can still be politically legitimate would have been a fit task for what in earlier times was called the judicial temperament. We might have covered ourselves with honor today by promising all sides of this debate that it was theirs to settle, that is, you and me and citizens all over the country, was theirs to settle, and that we would respect their resolution. We might have let the people decide. But the court has cheated both sides. 5 of 9 unelected folks have cheated both sides by robbing the winners of an honest victory and the losers of the peace that comes from a fair defeat. We owed both of them better. In other words, when the court took this power of democracy away from Congress, away from the president that signed DOMA into law, and potentially away from states and their legislators and their constitutions, they are robbing our people of democracy and their power to decide these questions. And it's kind of like Roe versus Wade. When you can't find a right in the Constitution, the liberals will come up with it in this manner. Normally, this used to be called substantive due process. It's not favored by conservatives because it gives too much power to justices. Substantive due process, they seek and they have to find a fundamental right, deeply right and liberty, deeply rooted in our history. Now, that's one thing the circuit judge in St. Louis said in his opinion. He concluded, when he struck down the Missouri's ban on same-sex, he concluded the freedom to marry is a fundamental right and liberty deeply rooted in the history of the United States. That is so disingenuous. The issue is not the right to marry. It's the right to marry in the same sex. That's just disingenuous. It's not intellectually honest.
So this is what kind of been bugging me for years now about this. And that is, and I'm wondering whether this is what we're really talking about. And it comes back to the Fifth and 14th Amendments here. Mm-hmm. Both of them have to do with the deprivation of liberty in particular,
yeah,
without due process of law. Okay, so the argument for the advocates for same-sex marriage, and it sounds like the circuit judge in the Missouri case too, mm-hmm, is this has always been a right.
Yeah.
This has always been a right. We just didn't know it or recognize it up until now. And if you don't let people of the same sex marry, you are depriving them of this liberty or of this right without the due process.
Well, he's saying that the right to marry in the same sex has been a right that we could consider fundamental and deeply rooted in our history. How can you do that? Mm-hmm. I mean, even Justice Kennedy, in his majority opinion, said very clearly that at the time the Constitution was adopted, the definition of marriage was very clearly one man, one woman. And it has been that way for over 200 years. How can you say changing that definition is deeply rooted in our history? You can't do it intellectually.
Okay, so what you're saying here is whether it's Roe or whether it's a future Supreme Court decision on the constitutionality of bans on same-sex marriage. Roe went looking for a right in the Constitution, and the most that they could, and they weren't honest, but the most that they could come up with was the penumbra and the shadows and the hints of this kind of right to privacy,
yes,
that equaled the right to abort an unborn child.
Yes.
Okay, so you're saying in a similar way the Supreme Court now is going to have to go searching for some kind of a phantom right to marry the same sex.
Yes.
Disregard history.
Yes.
Disregard all previous law, disregard DOMA, disregard all those things.
And disregard the case they just rendered in 2013, because they very clearly said this issue is up to the states. Won't it be interesting when they get the question of a court of appeals that affirmed a ban in the states?
Now, the point of Scalia's – you read part of Scalia's dissent there, and the point he seemed to be trying to make was – and actually he made very well,
mm-hmm,
was – when you overturn the democratic process on any decision, when this court does this, everyone loses.
Everyone loses. Everyone loses. If this were, if this was an issue discussed in the Constitution, that's a different matter. It is not. And what he's saying is, this is not up to five justices. It's up to the people, both in the federal realm and in the state realm. He's not. He did not ever make an argument supporting either side of the question. The more important question, the one that we should all be concerned about, is a situation where five of nine justices determine for you and me what the new rights are that are not, that were not fundamental in the Constitution and were not intended by the framers.
If
can you imagine taking that kind of power away from potentially 50 state legislatures and the Congress and the president? That's a scary thought. And that's where we are right now.
If that kind of logic is employed by the court to essentially say we are going to accept the argument that there that this right to marry the same sex existed before and we can't deprive anyone of it,
yeah.
if they accept that logic and that argument, do they have any credible basis for anyone who wants to assert any further right to redefine marriage?
Well, actually, it's even worse than that.
Okay.
If they were honest with this concept of substantive due process in the Fifth Amendment, they would have to find that the right of same-sex marriage is deeply rooted in our traditional history of our country. That, to this point, has been the law. They've gone beyond that. They have said, we don't care what the legislators of the states have said in their interpretation of decency. Okay, we don't care what Congress has said. We don't care what the president that signed the law said. We have determined on our own that the only decent thing to do is grant this right as founded in the Constitution. That is an awesome, awesome grab of power that we should all be very, very concerned about.
Now, you mentioned before when we were talking about this that the this would be the first time that the Supreme Court has kind of overstepped its
power
and kept the power in perpetuity. They've managed to do it.
Yeah.
Even judicial review, one might argue. Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you. I don't think it's the best place to locate the final say. Even judicial review, some would argue, was occasioned by the court saying, we're going to take this power.
Yeah, but see, when John Marshall rendered the decision in Marbury versus Madison, he was faced with a situation where Mr. Marbury filed a lawsuit for the very first time in the Supreme Court, and the Constitution forbids that with that kind of a case. Congress had enacted a statute that enabled it. And he says, how can I accept this case? It's flat against the Constitution. We can't do that. What you've done here is unconstitutional. He had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
He had no choice. That was pretty clear, I think. But what the other thing Scalia is saying is, look, if you don't like DOMA, do the Democratic thing. Persuade your elected representatives in Congress to repeal it. That's what we're about. We're not about five people destroying the will of the people on this issue.
Okay, let's take another break. When we come back, I do want to return to something you mentioned before, and I think it's significant here, and that is that the current administration essentially refused to support a democratically decided law in DOMA. And they said, look, we're just going to put our hands up and let the whole game pass us by. And I want your thoughts on that. Tad Armstrong is our guest, an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, formerly taught constitutional law at Greenville College, founder of ELL Constitution Clubs, and author of the book It's Okay to Say God, A Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. Folks, there are 6 weeks left in 2014, and we need a little more than $100,000 to cover our expenses for the year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2014.
Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the U.S. Constitution and same-sex marriage with Tad Armstrong. If you have a question or a comment on that subject, feel free to give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, November the 19th. 877-623-6943, or send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Tad, I did want to ask you about what you mentioned before, and it was a, kind of a crucial point in DOMA getting before the Supreme Court, and that was the refusal of the Obama administration and the Attorney General in some shape, matter, or form to defend the law in court. What exactly happened there?
Well, you know, this comes up quite a bit. Does the president have a right to decide for himself that he's not going to defend the constitutionality of a congressional act? I have to say yes. I mean, you know, first of all, if I were president, I would never have permitted my HHS secretary to adopt a regulation that required faith-based corporations to supply abortive fashions. I would never have done that. But let's change that a little bit. Let's say that Congress had done that, and then it was up to him to enforce that law. I would not have enforced it. I believe it's unconstitutional. And I think the president has the right to make that determination. And that's what he did in this case. Really, nothing lost. I mean, the arm of the Congress, there was a body in Congress that took over the defense of the statute, and it was properly pled and argued in the Supreme Court.
Okay.
So I think we're – yes, he has the obligation to uphold the Constitution. Boy, what does that mean, huh? I would never ask a president to defend a law they believe to be unconstitutional. They may be wrong about it, but it'd be hard-pressed to do.
Okay, with that said, let's talk about the power of the court. That was something we were talking about before the break. And if this is, as you have said, an attempt on the part of the majority of the court to take for themselves a power, and kind of an unprecedented power, vis-a-vis a democratically decided law, what's the remedy for that?
Good question. I'm writing a book about this. It's called One, The Power of One Vote on the Supreme Court. By the way, the most important thing you do when you vote for a president is you put a person in that seat that has the right and the power to nominate judges on the Supreme Court. And when you vote for senators, you vote for people who have the right to confirm or reject those nominations. I contend that is the most power that those two things really, frankly, are such powerful tools that's why we have to be careful who we elect. Because if the if the makeup of this court shifts by one in the wrong direction, just one, Hobby Lobby will be reversed. The Heller decision on the right to defend yourself with a gun in your home will be reversed. All of these really serious cases will be reversed, and that's why it's so powerful. A lot of people suggest that the Supreme Court ought to have term limits or age limits. I reject both of those propositions, and here's why. We cannot predict when a Supreme Court justice is going to retire or die. But if the president and Congress knew when a Supreme Court justice was going to be forced out of office because of a term limit or because of an age, can you imagine the politics that would be played on the timing of these issues? I think we get a much more fair fight when it's unknown when these folks will not be in those seats anymore. But how do we remedy this? We vote for people. We first educate ourselves on the Constitution, and then we vote for folks that are going to enforce the Constitution. We are not in the predicament we're in today because of the Constitution. We're in it because we have not paid much attention to the Constitution and its principles.
Finally, with a minute or so here, if you were given the opportunity to make an argument before the U.S. Supreme Court against the constitutionality of same-sex marriage, how would you go about doing that with the minute or so?
Against the constitutionality?
So, to say that same-sex marriage is contrary to our Constitution or is not addressed by our Constitution.
And that, as distinct from either defending a congressional definition of marriage or defending a state's adoption of a ban on same sex. You're drawing a distinction here?
Yeah.
I would make the same argument that apparently was lost in the Windsor case. The Constitution does not discuss this question. It doesn't discuss abortion. It doesn't discuss several things that should be left to voters, period. And that's where I'd leave it. For a Supreme Court to come up with something not in the Constitution, especially when it's opposed by the people of the nation, is a destruction of our nation, a destruction of freedom and democracy.
With about 30 seconds, this is going to the court.
Well,
it is, isn't it?
I would think so. When you've got courts of appeal that have different results, I would think so. I would think so. It takes 4 of 9 to accept an appeal. They didn't do it in the states that affirmed the ban. But now that the Court of Appeal has, they did not accept an appeal from a Court of Appeals that struck down the ban. But now that a Court of Appeals has affirmed the ban, we have a conflict. And that's not good for the nation. I would think they would accept it.
Currently comprised, 15 seconds. How do you think it's going to come out?
Well, I'm afraid Justice Scalia is probably right with his cynicism. If it comes out in the manner that Justice Kennedy described the Windsor case, each state would have the right to make that determination for themselves. I'm afraid, I'm very concerned, however, that they're going to take the next step and even assume more power than they think they have, that they had in Windsor, and call this now a constitutional right, regardless of what the states say about their own definition.
Tad Armstrong is an attorney in Edwardsville, Illinois, formerly taught constitutional law at Greenville College, founder of ELL Constitution Clubs, and author of the book It's Okay to Say God, Prelude to a Constitutional Renaissance. You'll find out more about this book and ELL Constitution Clubs at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Tad, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to continue our series on different names for the Lord's Supper, talking with Pastor Will Whedon about the term the Eucharist. It's one that we actually draw up out of Holy Scripture, and we'll find out how that is the case. We'll also find Christ in Ezekiel chapter 34. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. This is the government we've been given, and this is the one power that every citizen possesses. The one power that every citizen possesses is his or her vote. And after this conversation, you can see why it is that important. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper, every service every Sunday, and Wednesdays too, preaching Christ crucified and risen. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is, 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri, or find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.